So I just want to start when that word came forth right there at the end, there was a verse that I had cut from my sermon, and now I added it back in. And I'd like to start with it. It's from Proverbs, and it's Proverbs 4. And it says this, "Above all else, guard your heart, for everything you do flows out of it." And when I was thinking about that verse, I'm a very visual person, so I went back to, you know, the old hand-dug wells, right? So back in the old days, they didn't just dig a hole and leave it wide open, right? Because they knew that if they left that hole wide open, that anything could fall in it, right? You could fall in it, an animal could fall in it, rainwater could come and wash in there and wash God knows what into there. It was important that they knew that the well is something that you needed to provide water to sustain your life, right? So they built a stone hedge of protection around that to protect their life source. And that verse again in Proverbs is, "Above all else, guard your heart, for everything that you do flows out of it." And I want to share today, there's going to be some texts that we all know, some stories that we all probably learned in Sunday school, but there's a couple different things that I want to touch on. Let's just open in prayer. Father God, we thank you so much for being with us today. We thank you for everything that you've already done in this service. Lord, we thank you for the hearing ear and the seeing eye, for you made them both. And we pray for ears to hear and eyes to see this morning, Father God, what it is that you want to show to us. We thank you for everything that you're doing in our hearts right now, the stirring that's in our spirit, the urgency we have to hear your word, Lord. And we thank you for it, in Jesus' name. So I titled this message, "Where's Your Investment?" And if you're like me, I got into cryptocurrency way too late in the game. And put way too much money into what a lot of people were saying was going to be the next big thing. And when I look at my Robinhood app, it kind of makes me sad. So I wanted to title it that today because it's one thing to have an emotional touch from the Lord, but it's another thing to have an investment from the Lord, an investment that you make into the kingdom. An investment that you make with your life, not in a passing, fleeting moment when you're surrounded by a bunch of other believers in the perfect atmosphere for you to get a touch from the Lord, but in every single day, right? So I don't know how many people remember last time I shared. I'm just going to give a quick synopsis of what I shared last time. And a little bit of backstory, because I never did get to the backstory. Let's all turn to Acts 12. I have limited time to share what I want to share, so I'm just going to get right into it. So Isaiah 26:3 says, "You will keep in perfect peace those whose mind is set upon you." And that kind of sets the picture and paints the picture for here in Acts 12. And I'm just going to start right away. I hear some pages turning, but I'm just going to get started. "Now about that time, Herod the king stretched out his hand to harass some of the church. Then he killed James, the brother of John, with a sword. And because he saw that it pleased the Jews, he proceeded further to seize Peter also. Now this was during the day of unleavened bread. So when he had arrested him, he put him in prison and delivered him to the four squads of soldiers to keep him, intending to bring him out before the people after Passover. Peter was therefore kept in prison, but was in constant prayer. Constant prayer was offered to God for him by the church. And when Herod was about to bring him out that night, Peter was asleep, bound with two chains between two soldiers, and the guard before the door were keeping the prison." So I'm not going to spend too much time here because this is just recapping what I shared last time. But what I shared last time was there's a piece that they talk about in Isaiah, and they talk about it all throughout. Okay. They talk about it all throughout the New Testament. They talk about it throughout the Old Testament. But there's a peace that you can have where Peter is in peace right now, knowing that his best friend just got executed last night and he got seized and he's asleep, right? And I want to share where that peace came from. Okay, so let's keep our finger there. And let's go to John 21. I think it's interesting what, you know, he's sleeping so soundly that the angel has to hit him. If those of you that remember, the angel has to come in and hit him to wake him up. And the thing that the angel says to him, I don't think he catches at the time, but it's the reason why he has such peace. And so we're in John 21 and starting in verse 15. So when they had eaten breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me more than these? And he said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. And he said to him, feed my lambs. He said to him again a second time, Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me? And he said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. And he said to him, tend my sheep. And he said to him a third time, Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me? Peter was grieved because he had said it to him the third time, do you love me? And he said to him, Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. Jesus said to him, and here's the key, feed my sheep. Most assuredly, I say to you, when you were younger, you girded yourself and walked where you wished. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hand and another will gird you and carry you where you do not wish. So that was the word of the Lord to Peter. Let's go back to 12 here, Acts 12. Sorry, we're going to jump all over into word today. I was actually, me and Justin, before I came down here, were talking about popcorn preaching. I don't know if any of you guys remember popcorn preaching, but I remember Pastor Vaughn was... He was infamous for being in the middle of a sermon or something like that and being like, Bob, come here. Here's your verse. 1 minute to prepare, and please preach for 5 minutes. And it was like, okay, all right, I got it. Cool. I got it. It's so important to be ready in season and out of season, amen? Where's your investment? Right? That's what we're going to be talking about today. Where is your investment? What is it that you're putting in that can be called upon in an instant if it needs to be? So and here in Acts 12, let's go back to what the angel said. Now behold, an angel of the Lord stood by him, and a light shone in the prison, and he struck Peter on the side and raised him up, saying, arise quickly, and his chains fell off his hands. Then the angel said to him, gird yourself and tie on your sandals. And so he did. And he said to him, put on your garments and follow me. Did anybody catch that Jesus said, when you're old, someone is going to have to gird up your loins for you, and they're going to help carry you out where you don't want to go? So Peter's holding on to the word of the Lord that was given to him. He knew beyond the shadow of a doubt he was not going to be executed that day, because Jesus told him, when you're old, someone is going to have to do exactly what this angel is telling you to do by yourself right now. It's important to hold on to the words that the Lord gives you, because it's the way that you can find peace in a storm around you. Let's go to another story here. We're going to go to 1 Samuel 17. So here we are in 1 Samuel 17. If I can find it, we'll be there. All right, so we're going to talk about David and Goliath. And I'm sure most of you have heard the story of David and Goliath a bazillion times, right? If you've been around the church long enough, I'm sure you've heard this story. But let's read it together anyway. Starting in verse 1. Now the Philistines gathered their armies together to the battle and were gathered at some place I can't pronounce, which belonged to Judah. They encamped there between a few places I can't pronounce. And Saul and the men of Israel were gathered together, and they were encamped in the valley of some place I can't pronounce, and drew up in the battle array against the Philistines. The Philistines stood on a mountain on one side, and Israel stood on the mountain on the other side, with a valley between them. And a champion went out from the camp of the Philistines named Goliath from Gath. I got a name right. All right. I didn't skip all of them. Goliath from Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. He had a bronze helmet on his head, and he was armed with a coat of mail, and the weight of the coat was 5,000 shekels of bronze. And he had bronze armor on his legs and a bronze javelin between his shoulders. Now the staff of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and his iron spearhead weighed 600 shekels, and a shield bearer went before him. Then he stood and he cried out to the armies of Israel and said to them, "Why have you come out to line up for battle? Am I not a Philistine, and are you not servants of Saul? Choose a man for yourself and let him come down to me. If he is able to fight with me and kill me, then we will be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then you shall be our servants and serve us." And the Philistine said, "I defy the armies of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together." When Saul and all of Israel heard these words from the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. Now David was the son of some guy in Bethlehem whose name was Jesse. I gotta keep you guys laughing. And I think it'd be more funny if I tried to pronounce it. So, and Jesse had 8 sons. And this man was old, advanced in years in the days of Saul. And the 3 oldest sons of Jesse had gone to follow Saul to battle. And the names of these 3 sons aren't important right now. David was the youngest, and the 3 oldest followed Saul. But David occasionally went and returned from Saul to feed his father's sheep at Bethlehem. And the Philistine drew near and presented himself for 40 days and 40 evenings. Does anyone think it's kind of crazy that this guy would come out, and it doesn't say it here, but it's often told in the story that Goliath would come out twice a day and he would give that challenge every single day. And there was never once before David, we're about to read, there was never once that anyone said anything to him. It's funny to me that no one ever stood up to him, but yet Goliath and the Philistines never advanced. For 40 days, 80 times, this giant came out and said, "Yeah, you guys are going to be, you're going to be our servants." But never once did he take an action to step towards any of them. It was just a lot of talk. He had a loud mouth. He looked intimidating. But never once did he take a step towards what it was that he was mouthing off about. I don't know why that hit me this time reading the story, but it goes along with what we're about to talk about with David. Okay, so let's go down here to verse 20. So David rose early in the morning and left the sheep with a keeper and took the things that his father had provided and went as Jesse had commanded him. And he came to the camp as the army was going out to fight and shouting for the battle. Let's see here. Let's go to verse 23. As he talked, there was a champion, the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, coming up from the armies of the Philistines, and he spoke according to the same words, and David heard them. And all the men of Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him and were dreadfully afraid. So the men of Israel said, "Have you seen this man who has come up? Surely he has come up to defy Israel, and he shall be the man who kills him." "And it shall be that the man who kills him, the king will enrich with great riches. He will give him his daughter and give him his father's house, an exemption from taxes in Israel." I'd sign up for that one alone. Then David spoke to the men who stood by him, saying, "What shall be done for the man who kills this Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?" And the people answered him in this manner, saying, "So shall it be done for the man who kills him." We jump down to 29. David says, what have I done now? Is there not a cause?" Right? We all know what happens in the story next, right? Where we have David that goes out to face Goliath. And there's a couple things that I want to focus on here, where there's the guy who's out there talking. Right? There's the big giant who's out there and he's making all kinds of accusations. He's like, "Where's your God? you're going to come and serve us, and you're going to be our slaves, and we're going to take this, and we're going to do that, and we're going to do all these things. And there's tons that's being said, right? And Israel's got nothing to say. Although there's tons of chapters and verses and books of the Bible prior to the story where they've already been delivered. How many times has God delivered them and they've forgotten? How many times has there been a trap set up for the enemy and God delivered them? I was listening to a teaching that was talking about how God is an 11th hour God and how he sets things up, sometimes not in our timing, a lot of times not in our timing, and was talking about when the Israelites left Egypt, right? And how the story goes, the Israelites came out of Egypt, they're coming to the Red Sea, they're at the edge of the Red Sea, and they turn around and look, and Pharaoh and his whole army is right there closing in on them. And then all of a sudden, God uses Moses to part the Red Sea, and they're able to get across on dry ground. And as soon as they get across the other side, and Pharaoh and his army is coming through, then the waters crash in and kill them all, right? You ever think about why that happened the way that it happened? I think that if God did things in our timing, in our timing, we would have walked up and the Red Sea would already be parted. We'd walk right through, and then we'd expect Pharaoh to come through and the water would crash down, right? But if things happened in our timing and we got across well in advance before the army had a chance to see what was happening, do you think that all of these military men would see that river parted and us on the other side and be like, yeah, that's a good idea. Let's go right through there. They'd be like, all right, let's evaluate this situation. But sometimes things happen in a split second, because when you're pushing so hard to catch something, when you're pushing so hard to catch something, a lot of times you overlook the obvious. You overlook the obvious that they're already through this. Why are the waters parted, and am I going to make it through? If those waters had parted, you got there well in advance, the water's already parted, you walk through, the water's closed behind you, and then Pharaoh shows up, guess what? All he has to do is go around the lake, and he's going to find you. But God set up a trap for the enemy, right? He set up that trap so that he would fall into it and would overlook the simple fact Oh, man, sorry. I might be preaching to myself today, but that's okay. Anyway, let's go back to David. I'm going to go over the rest of the story very quickly. We know the story. David went and said, I'll fight him. It's not a problem. And Saul said, well, you're not going the way you're going. You're going to put on my armor. You're going to go out. And we all have this picture in our head. I guess we learned it from Sunday school, that David is in this armor, and he's a kid, right? So he's in man's armor, and he, like, can't move in it. And it's this giant helmet, and he can't pick up the sword. And he's like, oh, I can't. There's no way I could go out there like this. But for me, I don't think that's how it happened. Said he was in his youth, right? But I think David was a strong dude. When they talk about him in the story, it says that he had been preparing, right? He was a shepherd. He was a strong guy. He was out there in charge of keeping all of the livestock safe. And I don't know about you, but I'm not going to send Willow, my youngest daughter, out into the field and say, all right, just make sure that you keep all the animals safe, all right? You'll be good. No problem. Just take care of it. Oh, a lion came and you killed it? That's cool. Oh, a bear came and you killed that too? No problem. Like, this is a guy, we're not talking about today where, you know, David's like up in a tree stand with an AR-15, like keeping watch over his flock by night, right? This is back in the day where he's on the ground, and we know that he was very proficient with a sling and a stone, right? So he's a very skilled shepherd. It says that he killed the lion and the bear, and now I'm going to go after this uncircumcised Philistine because he dares to defy the armies of the Lord. And I want to talk about, this hit me the promises, we talked about the promises in the first story. We're going to talk about the promises in the second story. Goliath came out, and he was defying the Lord of Israel, right? All right, I don't know that we have time to go here, but we're going to anyway. So bear with me. We're going to talk about the promises. We're going to go to Genesis 12. We're going to talk about Abraham. We're going to talk about what David knew that Goliath didn't know. We're going to go to Genesis 12. And these are the promises that God made with Abraham. Now the Lord had said to Abram, "Get out of your country, from your family, and from your father's house to a land that I will show you, and I will make you a great nation. I will bless you, and I will make your name great, and you shall be a blessing." This is the key. "I will bless those who bless you, and I will curse those who curse you. And in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed." Let's quickly go to Genesis 15. Where are we here? Genesis 15. Sorry, I'm trying to find where. It'd probably help if I was in Genesis 15. That would probably be pretty good. All right, let's go to 15 and verse 18. And this is still talking about the covenant that the Lord made with Abraham. "On the same day, the Lord made a covenant with Abraham, saying, 'To your descendants I have given this land, from the river of Egypt to the great river, the river Euphrates, to the Kenites, the Kesites, the Gammonites, the Hittites, the Perizzites, and the Raphaim.'" The Perizzites, right? "The Perizzites and the Raphaim." Does anyone know who the Raphaim were? So the Raphaim were the giants. God promised before David was ever even born to Abraham that he was giving them this promised land and that the Raphaim was going to be overthrown. So David knows who his God is, first of all. He knows the promise that anyone that curses the name of the Lord, my God, the Lord has cursed. And he also knows the promise that the Raphaim is not going to make it, right? So now you have this Philistine, this Raphaim, this giant coming and standing before Israel on Israel's land. He's a trespasser on Israel's land talking a lot of smack. Not doing anything but running his mouth, right? So David goes and he goes, why is nobody standing up to this guy? He hasn't done anything but talk. And we already know that anyone that curses our God is cursed. We already know that we were promised this land. And we already know that the Raphaim is going to be eliminated. So why are you scared? It was a promise. It was a promise that David knew that happened generations before David that he held on to in the moment when he needed it. Just like the promise that Jesus gave to Peter and said to him, when you're old, you'll have to gird up your own loins. Sorry, someone else will have to gird you up and help carry you out. So when it looked like Israel was going to be overthrown, when someone was there that in all natural circumstances should have been able to wipe anybody off the map by just his sheer mass and size. And when you're in a prison chained up and you're going to be executed the next day, these guys are in peace. Is anybody here today? They knew. What did they know? They knew the promise that God had given them. You've got to know the promises. That's part of the reason why anytime I get the opportunity, I talk about how important it is to read this book, to know this book. I shared 2 weeks ago when we were doing the moving up ceremony for the kids that the Bible talks about anytime in the Old Testament where the word know is used, it's talking about intimacy, about a man knowing a woman. And it says to know the truth, and the truth will set you free. That's not a casual relationship. The only way you're going to know the promises that God has for you is knowing, is being intimate with the Father, with letting Him tell you, and then not letting go of those promises. Right? There's so many stories in the New Testament when we'll go through a couple of them, right? There was Peter, like we just talked about. There was Jesus asleep in the boat. We can all think of stories where people were in perfect peace when they shouldn't have been. Jesus, when they're getting ready to kill him, right? So many different times they were getting ready, oh, we're going to stone him. And he walks right through the crowd and they can't touch him, right? There's so many times when you can walk in this peace. The spiritual revelation knowledge that Peter had of who Jesus was far superseded his natural vision. It's the same with David. It's the same with all these heroes of the faith. And they're no different than we are, right? There's no difference between us and them. Even the apostles, when Jesus came back from the dead, he told them, he was like, hey, Ish, just so you know, I'm about to go die on the cross. I'm coming back, though, okay? Don't forget. I'll see you. Dies on the cross. Shows up. Hey, Ish, what's going on? And Ish starts freaking out. Like, I just told you this was going to happen. And you think I'm a ghost? All right, give me some food. Let me prove this to you, right? They walked with him. They talked with him. They saw him heal hundreds and hundreds of people, and yet they still doubted because they weren't holding on to the promise. They weren't holding on to the promise of, hey, man, I'll be right back, all right? And what was the promise that he gave us at the end before his ascension? Hey, guys, I'll be back. Arnold Schwarzenegger did not invent that, okay? I was stolen. Oh, man. So I want to focus a little bit on David, some of the things that we skipped over about what he did in the field, right? We mentioned that he had killed a bear, he had killed a lion. He was proficient with a sling and a stone. But I want to focus on the fact that he knew in the situation that he needed to be ready. And we can say that God gave him the ability to slay Goliath in that moment, but the Bible tells us that he was proficient in what he was called to do, right? He didn't learn how to sling a stone in that moment. When the crisis presented itself isn't when he started studying and figured out what was going to happen and what he needed to do, right? He was already proficient before the crisis arose in front of him. Before Goliath ever showed up on the scene, he was getting proficient in what was going to be required to take him down, right? And I think the Lord is calling us to get proficient in the things that he's put in front of us. We know this in the natural. We know in the natural that if I don't want to have a dad bod, that I need to watch what I eat and I need to go to the gym, right? Thanks, John. I'm glad you have my back. We know this, though, right? We know, okay, if I don't want to look like this, I need to stop eating what I'm eating, pizza. So, funny story, the other day, I'm oh, man. So, right now, I'm working in Connecticut. I'm staying out there Monday through Friday. And the other day I wasn't feeling so great. So I'm on the phone with my wife and she goes, "What did you drink anything? And did you have anything green today?" And I was like, "Well, I had a Mountain Dew, so yeah." I'm like, I checked both of those right off the list in one shot. Oh, man. Just tuck that one away if you ever need it, all right? Green popsicle also works. I mean, then you're getting dessert and green all in one. You got to know these things. Fat guys know these things, all right? All right, I don't want to get off track here, even though I did. There's things that we know in the natural, A plus B equals C, right? I want to show a couple pictures. Ari, if you could put up the first picture. Can we dim the lights so we can actually see this? So this, those of you that don't know, this is my backyard right now. We just got a bunch of work done on our backyard, and we have this beautiful, lush green grass, as you can see. And the reason I wanted to put this up, the Lord was speaking to me this morning. I was out on a walk drinking my coffee, saying, Lord, I'm supposed to preach today. If there's any way that this cup can pass from me. So I'm out on a walk, and I'm looking over this field, right? And in this photograph, you can see how thick and nice the grass is. You can see the freshly cut, you know, lawn marks right here. You can see where my mower went. Like, this, it's not Yankee Stadium, but we're getting there, right? And I was looking at this, and I know what this looks like in reality. I know that from this angle, it looks like this is thick, lush grass. Can you go to the next slide, please? But from over top, this is what it looks like. So try to follow where I'm going here. Go back to the first slide. This is what it looks like, and this might be what everybody around you sees. But what is the ground you're standing on really look like? Go to the next slide, please. Where is our investment? There is a lot of work that is involved with getting this to look like the first picture. And no, it's not photoshopped, it's just the angle that the picture's taken at. Let's go through some of these other slides. In order to get to that point, go ahead, Ari. There was a forest of trees that had to be cut down, right? This is the same location. So there was a bunch of trees here. There's little willow, so you can see how big these trees are. But you can see how uneven the ground is. You can see how many trees there are and the root systems that are involved. Next slide. And here you get a good view of there's tons and tons of these giant rocks and these huge, massive tree trunks and roots and how uneven the ground is. And that really handsome young man standing there. You can see all of these things. But in the first picture, everything looked flat. And everything looked green and lush, right? Keep going to the next picture. So now you see, in the back there, we have all this fill coming in. You can see in the back there, that's about 6 feet higher than it is over here, the amount of fill that's being brought in, so that over here at this hill and over here at that hill can be flat across, right? Keep going. There's Finley. But you can see how torn up the ground is, how rutted this is. Like, you couldn't walk in my backyard all spring long, most of the summer, because of these giant ruts that the machines left and the trucks left that brought in this fill. Next picture. And there you can see even more fill came in. Over 100,000 yards of material got brought in here. For those of you that don't know, that's about... They were bringing in between 40 and 50 triaxle loads of dirt a day for probably 2 weeks over the course of the whole time to get this filled up. Is that the last picture? Go ahead. So there's the triaxle. That's what Dale's company uses. But you can see how it's starting to take shape. So when it goes from one of the first photos where there's massive trees to where this is, that's a ton of work already, right? But then to go back to the first picture, to get it to here, there's a ton of work that's involved. A ton of work, a ton of time. And when I walk out there and I see this, or I drive home and I'm coming down my driveway and I see this, I'm like, yes, we're finally making it somewhere. And then I go out to the second slide and I see this. And I think, man, there's so much preparation. There's so much money. There's so much that's been invested into this property to get it to where I want it to be. In the natural, it's easy for us to make those kinds of decisions, right? When we know, when we see something in our heads, or we know that we want something, it's easy for us to make the sacrifices that it can take financially, time-wise, to get from point A to point B. It's an easy thing for us to do most of the time, right? But a lot of us want to go from getting the idea to go to the first picture. We want to go from having the idea in my head to this in one moment. And it doesn't happen. And it's funny that the way that this story played out was we didn't have any intention of getting to this point. When we started on our property, I called a friend of mine who cuts trees down because after the ice storms that we had back in March, I think it was, when we were all losing power, February, there was a giant maple over my house, this giant, huge maple. And I'm hearing the wind laying in bed, and I'm like, oh, Jesus. Oh, Lord. So after that storm passed, I called a buddy of mine who cuts down trees, and I was like, okay, how much to take this tree down? And he came over, and he's like, yeah, it'd probably be about $3,000 to get rid of that tree. And I'm thinking, whew, that's steep. But if this thing falls or a limb falls off it, it's cutting my house right in half. And then $3,000's not going to seem like all that much, right? So I have another friend that also does tree work, and he does land clearing as well. So I called him up to come over and see, you know, how much he would charge. You know, obviously you always get a second opinion. And he came over, and we were talking about gardening and this and that and how Esther wanted to have big garden. We have this plan that someday we can take these other trees down and kind of grade the property out. And we're just talking, right? He takes a look at the tree, and he's like, yeah, I would definitely need a climber to come in and cut those limbs down. You know, and I'm thinking like, all right, the other guy didn't say anything about a climber. So $3,000, what is he going to hit me for, right? So we're just talking, and he's like, so are there any other trees you want to take down, or is it just this one? And so we started walking the property, and I just started saying like, yeah, we'd love to be able to have a garden here. Love to be able to flatten this out. We want to cut a driveway through to the other side. Like, just started throwing out dreams that we've had for this property, right? Ideas and dreams. And he goes, okay, so when do you want to start? And I was like, if it's going to cost $3,000 for that tree, then how much is all this going to cost? And he goes, no, so I clear property and I sell the wood. He's like, I can take down any trees you want to take down, and we'll split the money 50-50. And I was like, what? He's like, yeah, I normally wouldn't do that. Normally it's like I would split it like, you know, 70-30, but since we're friends, like, I could do 50-50. And I'm thinking, so I went from paying $3,000 for this one tree to then having all the trees I need cleared, and I'm making money off this. And I'm not the one out there doing the work. I'm like, how's tomorrow sound? Is that a good time to start? So then I also had Dale come over, and we were talking about, you know, how much it would cost to bring in dirt to do what we did there. And, you know, we were talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of material, which I don't have, right? I mean, I know I'm beautiful to look at, but I don't have that. So Central Hudson is working right up the road from me, and they're doing a lot of construction. And so with the job that I have, I know that they need dump sites to put material. So I talked to Casey, who's in our church, who works for Central Hudson. He said, "Oh yeah, I'll get you hooked up with the guy that you would need." I call him, they come over and they look at the property and they get super excited. They're literally from here to the end of the parking lot away from this giant construction site. And they said, "Okay, yeah, we'll bring in a couple loads of stone so that our trucks can get where they need to go, and we just need somebody to push the material off." I'm like, "All right, so how much are we talking per truck?" They're like, "Oh, no. You can have the material. We need a place to put it." So now we've gone from one $3,000 tree getting cut down to hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of improvements on our property done that we got paid for. I remember there was a promise. There was a promise when we were in Florida and we were working at a church down in Florida where someone said, I see the Lord saying that you're going to get gifted. You're going to get gifted property. You're going to get gifted a house." And I held on to that. I've held on to that. The house hasn't materialized yet. But I just showed you pictures of what the Lord's been doing without striving for it to happen. But there's still the work that's involved with all of it, right? The Lord wants to bless you more than you could possibly imagine. But he wants to be intimate with you. He wants to know you. He wants you to know him. There was a song the other day that I was listening to that brought me to tears, because a lot of times in the way that my mind works, I flip things from what we're singing to the Lord to him singing it to us. And it was that song by Brandon Lake where, you know, he's singing to the Lord, "Come a little closer, stay a little longer," right? And I flipped that in my head and it brought me to tears, because I was thinking that we're singing this to the Lord. He's always there. He's always there. He always wants to be with you. Like when one of my kids run in the room, or I haven't seen them for a while when I get home from my work trips, and they come running out of the house, "Daddy, Daddy, Daddy's home." That's how the Lord wants to be with us. He's saying, come a little closer. Just stay. Don't go. Stay a little longer. Don't go. I don't want to just touch you on a Sunday morning. I want to be intimate with you. I want to know you. I want to know you like you've never been known. I want you to know the promises that I have for you, the plans I have for you. I want you to walk in a peace like you've never experienced. I want you to walk with me. And that's what he wants for each and every one of us. Does that mean that you're going to get hundreds of thousands of yards of material? I don't know. But I didn't think that I was going to either. I just knew that when the Lord gave us that property for the price that we got it for, that he was working, right? And he was orchestrating things. Your vision has to be based off the promises that God has for you and not what you see in the natural. When you're going to bungee jump, you put your trust in that equipment. And you put your trust in what you've seen other people successfully do. And part of the reason I shared this story about what the Lord's doing in our lives with the property, and when I shared about David and Peter, and every Sunday that something's shared to encourage your faith, it's for you to have trust in him because of what you've seen him do for other people. Right? That's what a testimony is, right? When people give a testimony, it's to encourage your faith. He loves you just as much as he loves me. I'm gonna close, and this isn't like a Pentecostal preacher closing. It's still another 3 hours. But one of the things I was thinking about was the work that's involved with that property, right? Everything that's happened on that property, all the work and hours and blood, sweat, and tears that have gone into making everything happen to get it to where it is now and where we still know that it needs to go in the future. And I was thinking about it like this. I'm a dad, right? So I'm always thinking about what my kids do. And I was thinking about it in this way. When you have a cake mix, it has the instructions on the back of how to make the cake and how to make it look like the picture on the front, right? But how often, like Pinterest fails are the coolest thing to look at, right? Like you see these artists that are making this really cool stuff and then somebody else trying it and it's like, nah, I don't see it. Like, where'd you go wrong there, right? But there's the directions are right there, right? Let's say that this is your cake box. It's got everything you need is right in there. And the directions are on the back. The directions are part of it. It's not like they just gave you the cake box and they said, all right, here's the powder, figure it out, right? Everything you need is already in there. And there's a step-by-step direction to get it to look like the cake on the front of the box. But it requires two things, that you do the work and that you follow the instructions. And how quickly, again, I'm always thinking about how my kids respond to things, and thank God the older ones are starting to teach me some stuff. Liam, don't listen. But how many times, like, you'll be reading the back of the box and you're like, okay, preset the oven to, I got it! All right, what's next? Like, okay, what did you set the oven to? It's getting hot. Okay. Pour the cake mix into the, I got it! Where did you put it? Well, it was dry, so it needed to be wet, so I dumped it in the sink. So, like, all right, okay. Add to, I got it! Like, how many times does, I know this is a silly example, but how many times is the Lord speaking to us, and before we have this step all the way laid out, I got it! Right? Like this morning in Rich's class, he shared a video of Beth Moore, and I'll close with this because I really enjoyed it. Beth Moore was at the airport, and there was a guy that came in a wheelchair with really long hair, long nails, stuff like that, and she was looking at him, and the Holy Spirit starts stirring in her heart, and she's like, I really don't want to witness to that guy. Please don't make me talk to that guy. I really don't want to talk to him. And the Lord said, no, I don't want you to witness to him. I want you to go up and brush his hair. And she's like, Lord, that guy really needs to be witnessed to. He really needs to get saved. So I'll go ahead, I'll go over there, and I'll tell him about you, and I will put it on, and I will really lay it on thick. And he's like, no, just brush his hair. Right? And how often the thing that we think that was the worst thing ever that could have happened, now we're hoping that that's what we have to do because of what the Lord's told us to do. And long story short, you know, she did go over. He had a hairbrush because she didn't have a hairbrush, which I can't imagine being in that situation. I mean, I carry a hairbrush all over the place. Chris, I don't know what they're laughing about. Do you? You want to help me out here? That's for the beard. There you go. But a lot of times the things that the Lord's going to ask us to do are going to be uncomfortable, right? But I want to go back to my opening question. Where are your investments? What is it that you're investing in right now? Both in the natural and in the spiritual. What is it you're investing in? We shared a couple weeks ago downstairs with the youth group this verse, and it's kind of stuck with me, Matthew 6:21. Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. It's easy to talk about investing in the natural into things, but how many of us are investing into the spiritual, are investing into how we're going to be able to stand when the crisis hits? And when the crisis hits, it's too late, right? If people in Florida weren't preparing for this hurricane that came, what do you do? So I just wanted to leave you guys with those thoughts of that the Lord will always, he promised that he would never leave us or forsake us. But he also commands our obedience, right? And he's laid out the instructions for us of what it is that he wants and what his desire for us is. And it's all there. And all we have to do is, just like my kids, we have to take it, we have to open it, read the instructions, and apply it. And we can get around people that have been doing it for years and years and years, because I guarantee you, even if you follow the directions on that cake mix perfectly, it's not going to come out the same way as someone that's been making those cakes for 50 years, right? So that's always my encouragement to our younger people, to myself, to my own children, to everybody in this room. Find someone that's been walking this for years. When you have a question, don't be afraid to ask them, right? There's also such power in your testimony. That's another thing that I'm always saying to people around me. Don't hold back your testimony, because you don't know the person that's going to help. That moment when you thought you were the only one and it was the worst thing that could ever happen, and if anyone ever found out about this thing, it would ruin you, it would ruin your reputation. Someone else is walking through that right now, and they think they're the only person that's ever in the history of the world gone through it, and your testimony might break them right out of it. Just having someone to stand with, just having someone to say, listen, I know what you're going through, I know it's hard, but I'm here, and we're going to walk this out together, and I know somebody that's going to walk with us. You're not crazy for thinking the way you're thinking. You're not crazy. You're not alone. Come on, let's do this, right? But that takes work. It takes taking us out of our comfort zone. And I really feel like that's what the Lord wanted me to share this morning. What are you investing in? Who are you investing in? And get ready for the return, both of your investment and the return. Because he said, I'm coming back.